A daring attack on a prison outside Abuja again tests Nigeria's security. ISIL claimed the ambush, in which hundreds of prisoners were freed. Does Nigeria have the resources and capabilities to curb violence by armed groups without assistance? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Rob Matheson. A brazen attack in a maximum security prison outside Nigeria's capital has laid bare the persistent struggles with insecurity. ISIL's claimed responsibility for Tuesday's jailbreak, which freed more than 800 inmates. About 400 prisoners are still on the run, among them several commanders of ISIL and Boko Haram, two armed groups that have been responsible for a series of attacks across Nigeria. That's left people in the surrounding community and in the nearby capital, Abuja, afraid for their safety. It's also raising more doubts about the government's capacity to deal with spiraling insecurity. Ahmed Idris reports from Kuje.
Authorities say the operation to rearrest escaped convicts is yielding results. But it's the admission by the defense minister about ISIL and Boko Haram commanders jailed here that's shocked many Nigerians.
We have a sizable number of Boko Harams that are in detention, and presently we could not locate any of them.
The statement is causing panic because security assessments show urban areas have become targets for armed groups.
There could be something bigger coming. This could trigger something else. Any man that have intention, have the energy to, you know, attack Kuje Maximum Security Prison, that person could do a lot.
If this thing can happen, that means we that are in open place are not even saved.
More than 870 inmates escaped when dozens of gunmen armed with explosives, rockets and guns stormed the Kuje prison. Hundreds have been rearrested.
Last month, Nigeria's most senior general announced a major attack on the capital had been thwarted, only for ISIL to launch this massive jailbreak. It adds to existing security threats such as kidnappings and robberies, which have been on the rise here. And with dozens of ISIL fighters, including the group's main bomb maker, now on the loose, people here are asking the security forces to step up.
The assault on Kuje prison isn't the first. Many other detention centers have been targeted in the past 5 years, resulting in hundreds of hardened criminals going free. Security analysts are worried that the Kuje attack may not be the last. Ahmed Idris, Al Jazeera, Kuje, Nigeria.
Well, the prison attack is the latest in a string of operations claimed by ISIL and Boko Haram. In 2014, Boko Haram made headlines when it kidnapped more than 200 girls from a school in Borno State. Around 100 of them are still missing. In 2017, fighters from the group ambushed and killed nearly 50 employees of Nigeria's national oil company in the Lake Chad region. Both Boko Haram and ISIL have targeted the Nigerian military. ISIL's claimed responsibility for attacks that have killed dozens of soldiers since 2015. And in April, ISIL bombed a market reportedly selling alcohol in the northeastern Taraba state, killing at least 30 people. Okay, let's bring in our guests from Maiduguri, Borno State. Ali Ndumi is a senator for Borno, South Nigeria. From Abuja, Aisha Yasufu is the founder of Citizens Hub. It's a non-profit organization focusing on advocacy for financial literacy and the increased participation of women and the youth in politics. And from London, Bulama Bukati is a senior fellow on sub-Saharan Africa at the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. Thank you very much indeed for being with us. Mr. Bukati, I'm going to start with you. This attack has been claimed by ISIL, and yet local media are saying it's the responsibility of Boko Haram. For those of us who are not au fait with the complexity of the situation in Nigeria, can you just briefly describe to us how these groups are playing out and what the intricacies are?
Sure. The group that claimed responsibility is called the Islamic State West Africa Province, that is abbreviated as ISWAP. And there is no contradiction between that group claiming responsibility and local media saying Boko Haram, because that group is one of the three factions of Boko Haram. Boko Haram is a group that was formed in 2003 in Maiduguri and went to war with the Nigerian government in 2009. And since then, it has killed directly 35,000 people, at least 35,000 people directly, and about 350,000 people indirectly through the poverty and humanitarian crisis that it created by displacing 3.5 million people across the Lake Chad region. Now, this group that started as Boko Haram initially splintered twice. In 2012, it splintered and a group called Ansarul Muslimina fi Biladul Sudan formed, which is now affiliated to Al-Qaeda. And in 2016, it splintered again, and one group called Islamic State West Africa Province was recognized by ISIS. Of course, Boko Haram itself pledged allegiance to ISIS in 2015, but the group broke into two in 2016, and one of the factions was recognized by ISIL, and that is the group that is today called the Islamic State West Africa Province. And so there is no contradiction. There are currently three different factions of Boko Haram operating in the northeast, north central, and the north northwestern part of Nigeria, and they are Ansaru, ISWAP, and the one that is traditionally called Boko Haram today.
Aisha Yusufu, why do you think this attack happened now?
The reason why this attack happened now and the other attacks that we've seen, it's because of a sort of like lack of effective dealing with this whole insecurity. And so the terrorists are becoming more emboldened, and they're doing all sorts of things, and they're getting away with it. In March of this year, a train was attacked, and citizens were abducted. And when they were abducted, the terrorists made demands for some of their people. They wanted a prisoners swap. And that didn't happen. And today, what we have seen is they're coming out to attack a prison and free their members that they were actually asking of. There have been series of attacks where nothing is seen enough to be done by the Nigerian state. And so the terrorists are becoming more and more emboldened. Let's not forget also that while the attack was going on, the same day we got the report of the attack of Kukuje prison, there was also attack on the security team sent ahead in Katsina. In December 2020, there was abduction of students in Kankara, which is in Katsina State, and that happened the same day that the president had gone into to visit his hometown, which is in Katsina State. Yet, the terrorists did not stop their planned attack. They went ahead to attack that state and take away students and walk away with them for days. They weren't intercepted. They, at the end of the day, the students, they were returned back by the same terrorists, while the commander-in-chief of the Federal Republic of Nigeria was at his home state in that same state. And that says everything. It says that they have no regard for our security agencies. They feel they can do anything and get away with it. And sadly, they're actually doing things and getting away with it.
Mm. Ali Ndumi, the fighting's been going on for years. Why has the government not seemed able to get a grip on this?
Actually, there are so many reasons. And I want to say that I appreciate the rundown given by Aisha Yusuf and Bukati. That is exactly the historical perspective of what the events that took place. But this is a problem that is not conventional. The insurgency is virtually something new, or it has taken our government by surprise. Even though it took a long time, it started in 2009, you remember, up to now, we have not been able to completely deal with the situation. And the reason is basically because you are fighting more or less an unknown enemy that can dissolve into the populace without being traced. So this is a different problem entirely, or war that we say the Nigerian government is facing. And I will also agree that not so much attention have been really paid to the problem in getting it completely solved. in the sense that whenever there is a kind of success recorded or they'll be able to subdue the instances, then the government seem to be reluctant. And then when incidents like embarrassing incidents like the Kuje case happens now, or the in the last 100 days, what happened in Kaduna, on the train from Kaduna to Abuja. But to sum it up, is that these criminals do these things and get away with it. Up to now, nobody have been brought to book.
There is,
in fact, what.
Sorry for interrupting you, sir, but there was one thing that I did want to put to you, sir. There have been a growing suggestion, certainly amongst the media within Nigeria, that one of the reasons why Boko Haram and other armed groups are so successful at doing this is that either the governments and the military and the intelligence services are so aware that this problem is so large that they simply can't cope with it and then choose not to do something about it, or there's an allegation that there are people either within the government or within the security services who are in some way complicit with Boko Haram and the other armed groups. What's your reaction to the allegations that this could be happening simply because either people are turning a blind eye or people actually sympathise with it who are in the security services or the government?
I don't think I will agree with neither of the two. But what I'm trying to, what I believe is happening is that, one, the government is not, or the army or the security agencies are not used to this kind of problem. That is one. So they cannot find easy solution to it. It's not like the conventional war. This is more, and it's not clearly defined as guerrilla war. That is one. Two, I will agree that this prolonged fight against insurgency may be beneficial to some people, so they really don't want it to end quickly. Otherwise, I don't understand why, for example, if an incident happened and then the government cannot say, hold some people responsible and say, get these criminals within so-so time. There must be timeline in these operations. I have always been saying that. Call the security chiefs, ask them to solve this problem within a specified time. And if there is anything they need, let them tell the government, and the government should provide those resources, equipment, and materials for them.
Bulama Bakati, I want to bring in Bulama Bakati here, because the point that Ali Andami was making there, certainly the first one, was that the military has not seen this kind of action before. Given the fact that this has been going on for about 10 years, is that actually a reasonable argument, that shouldn't have the military and the security forces have learned to adapt to what is happening in their country now after such a long time?
No, I mean, you are completely right. The military would be right to say we did not know how to fight these groups in the first 2-3 years of the crisis, but we are in the 12th or the 13th year today. And it started in 2009, and therefore, whichever military that is serious should have learned lessons and should have strategized and developed a plan to tackle the crisis. And so I completely do not agree with the fact, with the idea that the military is still getting used to the crisis, which has been going on for 13 years. But one thing I agree with in the senator's argument is that this is a guerrilla group. And guerrilla groups are always difficult to defeat because your aim is to defeat them, while their aim is to create enough stability and get enough media attention. That's how terrorism works. And the government has been throwing a lot of money and equipment and logistics to this problem. The key problem for me is lack of coordination and synergy between and among security agencies in Nigeria. Nigeria has over 17 security and law enforcement and intelligence agencies, but each of them is operating in silos. None of them are cooperating and working and coordinating and synergizing together. And because they are pursuing different, because they are not cooperating, and in some cases, some of them see others as rivals, these groups are exploiting the gap that is created in this policy, in this landscape. And unfortunately, the federal government, the Office of the President in particular, and the National Security Advisor have failed woefully in bringing security agencies so that they can work together. The second thing is that state governments are also not united. Zamfara state government, Katsina state government, Kano and other states, each state government pursues its own policy. And some of these policies are sometimes inconsistent, even contradictory in some cases. And the only person benefiting from this inconsistency and contradiction and lack of cooperation and synergy is the terrorists. And therefore, what you need is a complete overhaul, complete review of Nigeria's security infrastructure in a way that will bring all the security and law enforcement and intelligence agencies together so they can work together, pull their resources, learn from each other, and defeat this group.
Aisha Yesufo, if I understand it correctly, one of the other points that Ali Ndume was making was the fact that it is possible that this in some way is benefiting some people because the fight has been going on for so long. How concerning is it that there might be some people who are benefiting from this, who are not necessarily within the groups themselves, might be outside that?
Well, it's very concerning. And what we have is that there's a lot of corruption that is going on. And this has been going on for a very long time. We've had situations whereby soldiers have written even to the president and commander-in-chief and tell him that there's a lot of sabotage that is going on. There's a lot of corruption. Their entitlements are not being paid. The kind of equipment you're getting, it's not the right kind of equipment that should be gotten. And there are people who are sort of like benefiting from it. And I'll give you an example. The former chief of army staff was reported to have houses worth millions of dollars in Dubai. He was the procurement officer of the administration during Jonathan's administration before this particular administration. And then he became the chief of army staff. What the military would come out to say was that he had snake farms, and so that matter just sort of like went away. And there have been a lot of allegations of corruption amongst generals with the kind of properties they are owning and the fact that they're not giving their all to this war against terrorism. And we find situations where generals who have spoken out, who have sort of like made demands for the right things to be done, are being demoted. So yes, there are people who are benefiting, whether it's directly or indirectly from this whole terrorism. But at the end of the day, the buck stops at the desk of the president and commander-in-chief. There's no strategic leadership from there. This war is not a new war. Since 9/11 happened, the world has changed. And even though insecurity, the insurgency came to Nigeria in 2009, but it has been there in other parts of the world. And the thing to do is to learn from what is happening in other places. You cannot fight this war without intelligence. And I'll ask the question today. If there's an ordinary citizen who has information in Nigeria right now about this escaped inmates, what is the number to call? Who do you call? There's nothing like that. There is the intelligence arm of the fight against the terrorism. It doesn't seem to work. The Nigerian security intelligence agencies only seem to have information when it comes to terrorists, and they never have only seem to have information when it comes to protesters, and they never have information when it comes to terrorists. Mm. And so these are some of the things that people are really worried about the fact that we are not even as if we're winning this war. It seems as if the terrorists are getting upper hand and they're becoming more emboldened every day. And that's not the way it should be.
Ali Ndume, I want to ask you about something that we had a report earlier from our correspondent, Ahmed Idris. And in that report, he was talking to a few people who were on the streets of Kuje, one of whom said that they were very concerned that something bigger was coming. How worried are you, given the attack that we've seen in Kuje and other attacks, how worried are you that actually this is just the prelude to something even larger?
I'm very concerned, and all Nigerians are very concerned, because Abuja, which is the federal capital, is supposed to be one of the safest place you can live, whether it's in Kuje Airport or anywhere. But with this development now, almost everybody is scared, and it's very, very embarrassing. The reason, as I said, in Kuje, there was no enough security around it. There was no lightning adequately. There was no CCTV cameras I mean, the personnel there are not grossly inadequate. So when the insurgents, maybe in large number, carried out that action and went away with it. So if they are not apprehended up to now and there's no information adequately, then everybody have reason to be worried and scared.
Aisha Yusufu, tell me about how this decade or so of violence in Nigeria has been affecting communities, particularly families and the infrastructure, health services and so on.
Oh, it's been very, very devastating. And it's been more so in the hinterlands, more in the rural areas where people are farmers, people have been killed, people have been displaced. Most of the farmers that we have in Nigeria are the ones, they stay in the rural areas. And most of them right now are internally displaced persons. And so this really affects the country. There have been a lot of killings. People have been killed and people are still being killed. And every day we're just waiting. You don't know who the victim is going to be. And we sleep every day not knowing whether we're going to be the next victims. And it seems as if nothing is really being done. And I'll give you an example. For example, the attack that happened in Kuje. Kuje is supposed to be the safest part Abuja is supposed to be the safest part of Nigeria. And a lot of people keep coming to Abuja, leaving their different regions and coming to Abuja. And today, that safety has been broken. And if you look at it now, the terrorists, it's been reported that they came in large numbers. So they came in large numbers and they didn't fly in. We've not heard any report that they flew in, took their people and flew out. So what has happened after the attack? We don't even see anything that seems to tell us that the government, the security agencies are actually going after the terrorists and also trying to get the prisoners back and also get the terrorists. And so we didn't see helicopters going after them. If they're moving, they are on land. Have they deployed air surveillance? Have they deployed drones to be able to trace them? Even Kuje was not locked down. You would expect that particular day, Kuje would be locked down. There will be door-to-door searching. It is only a few hours ago that they brought out images after citizens were asking, where are the images of these people for even the citizens to have a place if they identify or see any of them to be able to call? So it's really been so devastating. Schools, children are out of school. A lot of schools have been closed down. A lot of people have lost their means of livelihood. Life in Nigeria today is short, nasty, and brutish. And it's really sad. This is not where we are supposed to be. And it's not about blaming anybody. The primary role of government is the protection of lives and properties. And any government that fails to protect the lives and properties of its citizens is not fit to be called a government. And that's where we are right now, where even state governors are calling on their people to arm themselves.
I want to bring in Bulla Bakati just to wrap things up for the program. Given the fact that it seems as though the infrastructure, particularly for the military, is not available within Nigeria, what is the answer that would help the Nigerian military and security start to turn the tide against this?
There are several things the Nigerian military, as well as the federal government, should do. I will just mention three of them. The first thing is for a proper, comprehensive, clear plan and policy on how to confront this situation. And what you need to do is a plan that clearly spells out the role of the federal government, that of the state government, and those of the communities, because everyone, all hands would have to be in deck. And the most important thing there is better coordination. Now that security and law enforcement agencies are working in silos, you are never going to succeed in this war. The second second issue is to flush out corruption in the security sector. There are a lot of money that has not been accounted for. The National Security Advisor, current National Security Advisor himself, has said publicly that billions of naira voted for security have gone missing and there is no accountability. this attack has happened, and I can assure you no one will be held responsible. And this is just one of the several prison breaks we have seen in Nigeria in the last 2 years. In the last 2 years,
Olamide Bakare, I am terribly sorry. I'm going to have to interrupt you there because I'm afraid time is against us. But I do appreciate you joining us in the program. I want to say thank you to all our guests, Ali Ndomi, Aisha Yusufu and Bulama Bakare. And thank you to you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Rob Matheson, and the whole team here, goodbye for now.